Hello, Ed. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Oren. Yeah. Trying to talk to too many people and one after another. It just doesn't. The technology doesn't work for that. Anyway.
Well, what do you know? We got you.
It's a great, it's a great sunny day or sunny week. Beautiful, beautiful weather here in Juneau at the moment, and been planting trees earlier today and getting ready to plant some more trees and get them staked and tied up and supported for the winter.
Yeah, that's the job this time of year, huh? Trees and shrubs and all that late fall planting, huh? Or, well, early
wait
fall.
Wait a second. Let's call it late summer planting.
Late summer, much better.
Come on. Don't hurry the season any more than you have to. We have to.
Late summer, early fall. That's what I meant to say. Yeah, so tell us all about that. What do we want to do in our gardens right now as far as...
If you have access to trees and shrubs that are potted from your local retailers or whatever, this is a good time for planting them because the soil moisture is good but not excessive, as long as you don't plant them in a swamp. But soil temperatures are good also. And it's a time when, though you can see, I'm sure you have some leaves falling already, and certainly stuff is turning color here, but they are still actively growing roots even while they're not actively putting out top growth. That's what we don't want, and we don't want to stimulate top growth at this time of year. So if we can get the plants, trees, shrubs, into the ground, they will still get themselves growing new roots. After we do some, if these trees and shrubs have been in pots for a while, they may be kind of root bound. So it's worthwhile when we pull them out of their pots I've got the three-tined little scratcher digger weeding tool. I'll usually try to scratch up the root balls of these things before they go into that hole that you have dug and then get backfilled.
Okay.
That helps in loosening up the roots so the roots aren't going round and round and round the pot, and then so they can spread out a bit. Still, we aren't going to be we don't want to put any fertilizer in this hole that you've dug, and we're only digging this hole the same depth as the depth of the root system, that pot that you have them in. And if anything, especially if you're going to be doing some bark mulching around them, even having sticking up a little bit, half inch to an inch above the existing ground level, and then pile bark mulch over the root system of that. And again, what that bark mulch does, other than, of course, keeping weeds down, is to help insulate the soil so it doesn't freeze too quickly. Hard to say when that's going to happen this fall, but the longer we can keep that ground from freezing, the longer the roots of these will continue to grow.
Right. Okay. So we are, we're planting kind of and expecting them to be good over winter, but we know that as soon as it freezes, those roots are going to effectively stop growing. So we want to mulch with bark or what else works for mulching, those kind of things, to insulate from the freeze?
Bark and wood chips works well if you don't want to have something for long term. You can even use bags of leaves, bags of styrofoam peanuts, although you've got to really hope that they don't get punched open so then you have styrofoam peanuts blowing around your yard and beyond. But that, at least for temporary mulch, again, for insulating the soil. And literally, you can use some of this, I'm sure you've seen this flexible foam insulation. Fishermen use it a lot to cover the ice in their fish holds.
Mm-hmm.
So even something like that, and then, of course, you have to hold it down with some rocks or something like that so it doesn't blow away.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe next spring you may want to plant some other ground covers around your trees or around your shrubs, perhaps. But again, the bark, or if somebody's been chipping trees and, you've got spruce, alder, hemlock, cottonwood chips from the, power line clearing or whatever they happen to be doing, that's great stuff. I usually try to get a couple of truckloads of that from the guys who are chipping, and then I use it for mulching trees after I've got them planted.
Great. Yeah. Because it's the cold air that's going to freeze those roots before anything else.
Well, yes, exactly. The cold air, and if you keep them keep a larger distance between that surface, then that will be great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
So again, think about what's available out there and look at the thing always when planting trees and shrub is look at, hopefully they've got tags on them or you know how big these things will get. So you plan to put them in the right location so that they aren't going to get too big too fast, whether they're blocking your view. People think, oh, you know, you dig up these cute little spruce trees at the edge of the forest here and there, and they're only a foot tall or 2 feet tall, and they look like, anyway, nice little trees, but then look up at their parents to see that they really do grow to be 60 to 80 feet tall or more. And don't plant them next to the house. Don't plant them under the power lines. That's just not a good idea because they will grow up that high. And then eventually somebody else is going to come along and prune them, and they may not be pruning them so carefully as you might like.
Yeah, gosh, that makes sense. Planting trees, think long term.
Yes, you really should. And again, this is the time of year, if your local folks have some trees, whether that's be fruit trees, maple trees, evergreens, rhododendrons, spireas, potentillas, any of that stuff, this is a great time for planting those. And then from there, go, you know, look at, this is the time of year as plants are starting to die back, they're done blooming, and leaves are turning yellow. I'm at my house right now, and I'm looking out at my bleeding heart. So those are, and they're turning yellow right now. So though it's time for those to be cut back, cut them back to a couple inches above the surface of the soil so that they don't just fall down in mush later on, you know, a month from now when the fall rains are pounding them down, and then they aren't going to provide slug habitat.
Right.
So it's time to do our fall, you know, start on the cleanup work if plants are done growing and starting to die back. But it also can be a good time for dividing some of these plants. Now, bleeding hearts are a challenge because they've got very brittle roots. They don't especially transplant well, or if you're trying to divide them. But there's a lot of other primroses and the wild iris or Siberian iris, astilbes. You know, the astilbes are pretty much done blooming now, most of them. And they can be dug and split up, or even leave the plant in the ground and just sharpen up your shovel or your axe or mattock and chop down through the middle of the plant. We've talked about this in the past, in the springtime often. Even rhubarb. This you could plant, just divide and increase rhubarb. But just dig right down through the middle of the plant, dig out half of it, take it, move it out in a way where you can do some cleanup work if it needs, if it's got weeds growing through it. You can maybe split it up into several more pieces, that half, and the piece that stays in the ground, if you throw some compost in the hole and a little bit of soil, put some mulch around it, that undisturbed chunk then is more likely to give you flowers next year than if you dug the whole thing up and split it all up and replanted it. And that's especially true of the irises, the wild iris, the Siberian iris. That will tend to slow them down because those new pieces, we've torn them out. They've lost roots in the process of our tearing, getting them out of the ground. And so they have to reestablish themselves. Primroses, not so much of a problem. They're most likely to grow and flower again next year. But the iris has at least may take one year off while they're growing more roots.
So is this kind of a process of like cloning these plants?
Well, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, this is vegetative reproduction. So we are getting exactly what we had there, whether it's a blue or a white iris, or if it's a pink or a yellow primrose, whatever that happens to be, it has the same genetic material. Cloning is one word for it. That's exactly what we're doing. And those plants then will be the same. So you, assuming that you or the gardener knows what color they were in their garden, as you know, whether they took pictures maybe or something like that, and they want more of these blue iris over here, or the light blue or the dark blue, whichever color matches with the grand color scheme that you have in your garden, then you can replant them. And of course, you can certainly share them with friends and neighbors, or put them in pots potentially for future sale, which I certainly do a fair bit of that. And so you're ready for, you know, ready for next spring and looking forward to, yeah, looking forward to that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That. So this process is kind of how you get passed along rhubarb plants for decades or...
Sure, your favorite raspberry plants or whatever it happened, particular flowers. I mean, I have plants in my yard. I'm looking at, I've got tiger lilies blooming here now that came from my parents' garden back in Upper Michigan, along with some peonies also.
Yeah.
And there's certain things that I know where these came from other friends who gave them to me. Mm-hmm. And again, I've got a, one of my plans this fall is to dig up some of these lilies and get them off to my sisters down at one's in southern Minnesota, another one in outside of Seattle, so that they have them. And my niece, my sister's daughter, is also going to get some of these lilies. So again, this kind of helps propagate it, and it, those flowers mean something more to us because they came from, you know, my father, their grandfather, or great-grandfather.
Yeah, that's right. So that kind of work, that sort of planning, sharing, the splitting up of these perennials, this right now, this is the time of year to be doing that?
It's a great time of year for it, yeah. And, you know, we choose our weather. Well, sometimes we don't have a whole lot of choice, but at this point, at least, it's pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can enjoy it, as opposed to waiting till later in October. It's also time of year to be planning for bulb planting, fall bulbs, and... we may do a whole program on that in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But still, if you're going to be, I don't know how much bulbs you get in town down there in Petersburg, your local folks who bring in whatever they do.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes if they don't bring what you want them to, then you can certainly order them through the mail,
mm-hmm.
Online. And there's lots more choices available to get those. But again, if you plan now, most of the, you know, a lot of the retailers or the mail order folks, it may take them a while to get there, but again, we can be planting them in October, so there is time to do the ordering and the shipping.
Right.
I know with peonies, at least, if you're interested in those, a lot of the catalogs, they won't, or the companies won't even ship them until maybe the 1st of October. So again, that's where looking at the gardens, like we mentioned about dividing perennials, maybe there's something that needs to come out of the ground, out of the garden, to make room for some bulbs, whether it be, well, tulips are a dear favorite, of course. I know that much by experience. But daffodils and some of the others are not eaten by deer.
Mm.
So look at your garden. Hey, where do I need some white daffodils or some yellow daffodils to give that extra burst of spring color in my yard?
Mm-hmm.
Or... of course, that may also include planning for some additional deer fencing or other exclusionary devices.
Right, yeah. So planning about deer, too. You know, I'm going to cut in here real quickly and put it out there to any callers who might want to take this opportunity to put a question to Ed. I know we've got a lot of listeners out there, and this might be a good opportunity. If anybody's out there listening and they have a question about this planning kind of... early fall, late summer, splitting up perennials, yeah, that kind of thing, then feel free to give us a call here, 772-3808, and we'll have a chance to ask a question or two to Ed. But meanwhile, I'll get back to what we were just talking about there. Ed, yeah, planning things out, planning out what bulbs you want to acquire, making local inquiries with your sources for bulbs, thinking about the garden that you have, what areas are susceptible to your deer predators, and
yes, and something else worth doing at this time of year, and actually doing it, you know, multiple times during the year, take some pictures of the garden to see what you have now, to see what is growing now, and that will also help you in the springtime in your planning. If you don't remember exactly, because some perennials are really slow to sprout in the springtime. And if you don't remember what you've got planted in certain areas because they don't sprout till mid-May and you're out there gardening in, well, I was gardening in January and February this year, where stuff is completely dormant, you may want to know, gee, what is planted? I know it's planted here somewhere, but where? It may be worthwhile doing that record keeping, using your camera, and have a little file, you know, a photo file of your garden with names and all that sort of thing, which again helps you with your future planning, knowing even if you're not going to be planting a bunch of stuff now, you might even just say, okay, well, I know I want to be doing that in the springtime. So which ones are going to be divided next spring, mm-hmm. and where is that going to go, or something like that. And again, or somebody else asks you, hey, I'd like to have some of that next spring. And you know you have it out there somewhere, but mm-hmm. you got to wait a while before it comes up enough so you can identify it again.
That is such a good idea, you know.
I mean, my memory is fading as I mature. And I mean, some other people have wonderful memories, but if you get enough plants after a while, it can be a challenge.
Really? Yeah, I mean, even if you think you're sharp as can be, when you're out there, you're looking around, sure, when you're there, you know perfectly well what you've just done, but it looks different in a few months, and you go back out there, it's just not the same place. It's easy to forget
exactly
what you had going on.
Exactly. So, yeah, do some record keeping to remember what you've got. And also, in the record keeping applies to the vegetable garden, too. If you haven't done it already, to mark down what you planted in certain beds or boxes so that you are able to do your crop rotation as you need to. So you plant something different in the potato bed or the cabbage bed or whatever there was out there. And plant something that's not related to avoid pests. Mm-hmm. And also keep track, of course, as we're harvesting, of the varieties that do particularly well. You know, you have two or three kinds of carrots, and they all kind of look the same, but, you know, you taste them, and, oh, this one's a whole lot tastier than that one, assuming that you labeled them to begin with, mm-hmm. or recorded that. And again, with potatoes, this one is more productive than that one. Flavor is better than that one.
Right.
You'll notice, was it affected by scab or something else? Did I get a lot of cracking
right.
in those because of the irregular dry conditions and then wet conditions that caused that? You know, just making yourself some notes some new stuff that you want to try. Or if you're visiting somebody else's garden, you mentioned about the garden tours. Mm-hmm. That were, last week or a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
that also is worthwhile. Hopefully people took notes mm-hmm. about what they saw, you know, varieties that they saw, and asking the people, well, where did you get that one or this plant or that those seeds for those plants? That's worth, so again, work on the planning. I mean, the planning is kind of ongoing, but, you know, as things, I don't know, that things are really slowing down, and you certainly really aren't for me yet, but it could happen.
Yeah, and in those quiet moments, we can think about, you know, the planning is an ongoing process. But I'm going to hop over to the phone line here. We've got a caller for us, Ed.
Okay.
Hey there, line one. You're on with Ed Byarski.
Hey, Ed. I last fall, I planted a lot of daffodils. And, I'm sorry, 2 years ago I planted a lot of daffodils. And last year they were awesome. And this year hardly any came back. And I don't know if a lot of them were planted like under a maple tree, close to rhododendrons, if that's part of the problem or got any ideas?
Well, a couple things for you. First, when we plant the bulbs in the fall, they come with, you know, if you were treating them as an annual, you know, only and for tulips, that's almost what I do, because usually the second year they don't do very much
right.
with because of the type of weather we have. With daffodils, they'll usually come back. The problem is that first year they've got all the nutrients they need in their bulb to do beautiful flowering, you know,
mm-hmm.
next spring after we plant them. But then we do need to fertilize that to follow that. You know, whether we're adding compost and we're fertilizing in the springtime. I mean, hopefully you fertilize when you plant them.
Yeah,
you know,
I
using
did.
Bulk
and
food,
so,
compost,
and I did do
and other stuff,
the
oatmeal and all that
thing, but I need to do more, like with compost or regular fertilizer?
Yes, both.
I thought
you
it
know,
would just
improve
be too
your
green.
Soil, and of course drainage too. If you, you know, maybe 1 year, I mean, that, you know, drainage can also change.
Uh-huh.
From 1 year to the next, you have a wetter spring versus a drier spring. That can quite definitely affect them. They want good drainage.
Right.
So fertility, and you mentioned being close to a maple tree and other shrubbery. And again, those trees and shrubs, you've dug your hole, you made some, added some good fertilizer or compost to them. Mm-hmm. Well, the trees and the shrubs can send their roots into that hole underneath and around the bulbs. They can steal the nutrients away from those plants much more efficiently. So that's, again, why it's important to keep fertilizing if you want them to keep coming back.
And that
applies to other perennials, too, not just bulbs.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, and maple, you mentioned the maples, they are particularly, well, most everything is shallow rooted around here.
Right.
So, you know, everything's in the top foot or so of soil. All the roots of a maple tree, or for those folks who try to plant near spruce trees or hemlocks or alders or cottonwoods, they're all difficult to plant near because of that, because
uh-huh.
their roots, it's like they can sense the nutrients, and they grow toward those nutrients, and they will then pull it out. So, yeah, keep adding that. If you plant some more this fall, just, you know, plan on fertilizing next spring again, and even a very light dose, you know, certainly some more compost, but also if you're using a granular chemical or organic fertilizer, too, really does help.
So what kind of fertilizer?
Normally, they suggested if you can buy bulb food, and
uh-huh.
usually bulb food tends to have, if you're looking at the numbers on the package of them, you know, like bone meal is recommended because it has high phosphorus, that second number
uh-huh.
Out of the three. Our common chemical fertilizer, 832-16, or perhaps 10-20-20, works. Again, it's got that high second number phosphorus. High third number is potassium. They don't need, the first number is for nitrogen. They don't need a lot of nitrogen. If you're growing cabbages and lettuce or lawn, yes, you need lots of nitrogen for those because you're growing lots of green leafy growth rather than flowers and fruits.
Right.
Or a root crop.
Okay.
So that's where, you know, look in the, see what's available locally for fertilizers, and a balanced garden fertilizer would be good for bulbs also.
Okay. Okay.
You know,
and
that's one thing where, you know, I mentioned, you know, bone meal is traditional for bulbs, but bone meal can also attract dogs too.
Hmm.
They can sniff it out and may want to dig up your garden going for the bone meal.
You
know, so depending what your two-legged, four-legged, six-legged, you know, or no-legged pests, the slugs, your numbers
are
like.
Yeah, I haven't seen any digging out there, but
you have to plan around some of those.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I better fertilize then. Probably need to plant new ones too.
And the other thing, of course, is with the amount of rain that we get, that leaches fertilizer out.
Uh-huh.
So again, whether it be for perennials, vegetables, flowers, all of this stuff, we have to fertilize because the rain leaches out the fertility of the soil,
uh-huh.
and it needs it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank
you,
caller. Yeah, okay.
Okay, bye.
Well, that was, a good caller, good question, and a good conversation that ties in with the whole planning thing. You have to plan to fertilize more than you would expect. Where you're planting those bulbs and perennials, you have to kind of plan for what plants around there are going to be competing for those nutrients. In the rain around
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, that's a good part of it, yeah. The plan for
it
the
It isn't
garden.
The same as having, you know, I grew up in the Midwest where there's moderately fertile soils. There's other places, I've got relatives in southern Minnesota, where there is the rich prairie soil. It's called blue earth because the soil kind of looks kind of bluish-blackish almost when they turn the fresh soil over. Very rich soil, high in nutrients.
Mm.
But as they, of course, down there, they're growing corn, soybeans.
Mm.
They've got to fertilize. And unfortunately, when they fertilize too much, then that stuff runs off into the rivers. And anyway, it leads to other not such good things.
No.
But so here, same thing. We don't want too much fertilizer to be running off into our creeks and into the ocean, too. So planning for using this is where using compost is good,
mm-hmm.
and other slow-release fertilizers is very good. And usually, again, stuff like the bulb food and some of the organics are slow-release. So, again, read the fertilizer boxes, packages, bags, whatever you're using, to see what they say, what's certain fertilizers are good for, and whether they are quick release, which, you know, a lot of lawn fertilizers particularly are for the summer lawn food,
right,
a quick release, stimulates lots of growth so that you have to keep mowing regularly every week or whatever. It's a vicious circle.
Yeah. Well, this has been a good conversation about planning for what to do next and long-term life and future and look of your garden. And that probably kind of brings us to the end of what we have time for today. I want to thank you.
Yeah, sounds good. And we'll be, you know, one of the upcoming programs, certainly we'll be talking more specifics about planting bulbs and different kinds of bulbs in depth and soil and all of that sort of thing. And we're going to be harvesting and garlic planting and various and sundry other stuff. So
fantastic.
But in the meantime, boy, enjoy this incredible sunshine.
Right.
And enjoy it while we can. And, you know, I see the fall colors are around us.
Yeah, this is a great time to be outside, and we know what you should be doing when you're outside. You should be in the garden.
Yeah, either that or catching some fish or filling the freezer, finding deer or other tasty stuff. It is time to fill the root cellar, fill the freezer, and fill the jars and whatever it takes.
It's all true. Yes. Well, wishing you many more sunny days up there, and we'll try to enjoy them and elongate them as much as we can down here, too. But thank you so much for your time, Ed.
Okay.
I'm glad we got you on the phone, and look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right. Will do.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So In the Garden is brought to you by The Flower Farm, and they are featuring season-end opportunities on all outdoor plants. Lots of perennials, trees, and shrubs planting this fall, planning for a gorgeous summer next year. Open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Oren Pearson. That was Ed Bajarski on the phone. Thank you, caller, for calling in. That was a great question, and we will talk to you next week. Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew, you can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy, eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle, put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle. Homegrown tomatoes, what'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Life I lead, well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden, be much better.